Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined, as always, in studio by my good friends, my partners in radio, Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin, who may be taking on new partners in radio soon. But that's not something we could talk about, Piper, because these deals at this magnitude, they are high-level, airtight, Pentagon security-esque. It's not incumbent upon us to drop that news right now, but let me tell you
why we didn't get the hosts of this podcast to sign a non-compete, you know,
this is what all great
evangelical leaders do. This Mark Driscoll did it. James McDonald did it. The people leave there and they can't say a word about what happened. We really should have put together a non-compete for the three of us. But we didn't. So now craziness happens.
You've never done it between the two of you. So, right. Why start now? Right.
Because we're grandfathered in. That's how this works. Mm. This is how business deals work, Ronnie. If you're the last one to do something, you get the short end of the stick.
See, boys, that's the way it is with the rant. I'm still just sort of the hanger.
You're still
on.
The new guy. Aren't
still
you?
The
still
new
the
guy.
New guy.
Still
I mean, it's only
always
been 5
the
years.
You know what this is like? You moved to small town America. You could live there for 40 years and you'd still be the new guy to somebody.
That is so
I know,
true.
And that's why I despise my very we're, existence.
We're nothing so. But a small town pod.
You know what?
See, I want to be a big city pod, though, boys. I don't look at us like a small town pod. I don't want to embrace that reality.
I want to be one of those new school Pirates of the Caribbean.
I do want to be one of those new school Pirates of the Caribbean pods, and I think of HR as that. By the way,
you're about to be one, though. You know what I mean? In a
no,
way,
I
we can't talk.
I don't
about
know what you mean, Big T.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, I have no clue what you're talking about. As we discussed off the air, I don't know what you're talking about.
It has to do with a huge media conglomerate and a best friend. And that's all I'm going to say. Piper,
and it's great that nobody's going to hear that because this will be the first time, unlike you, on a weekly basis, that I actually edit something out.
There you go, baby.
Oh, no. Here's the thing. You ask me to edit it out, and it's completely up to my discretion whether or not it happens. So good luck with that.
No, we should edit
that. Boys, we're having denominational differences today on the pod. I just want to let our listeners know that right
now. Dude, high security, high level, these deals. We don't want to do anything that would sacrifice the deal. Piper, speaking of deals and speaking of new relationships, new endeavors in business, it is literally raining sponsors on us right now. And why don't you tell us about one or both of them?
All right. Well, yeah, we've got two today. So the first is a new partner for us. It is Paul's Leather Company. And we have a history of working with fine crafted leather goods on this podcast. We did a partnership with Saddleback. We did a couple other ones in the past. But Paul's is a little different because they specialize in handcrafted Bibles. And they're not obnoxiously expensive. Like, you can get a really nice handcrafted sewn binding Bible for about $100. I'm looking at their ESV thin lines right now. And they're $99. And then they go up from there depending on if you want a bigger Bible or not. But They're all handcrafted, sewn Bibles, full grain, natural leather. So if you're a leather wonk, that means something to you. If you're not, it just means really nice natural leather. The other thing they can do is rebind a Bible. So if you have something that is like an heirloom, you know, it's passed down from a parent or a grandparent or, you know, somebody you cared about and it's falling apart, you can send it into them and in that same price range, they will rebind it for you so that it will hold up for another, you know, 40 or 50 years, which is a pretty awesome thing. So if you go to paulsleatherco.com, paulsleatherco.com, you can see all their products. They have other leather goods as well, some journals and things like that, but the Bible is their specialty. The other cool thing they have on their website, they have a blog where they have featured different ministry leaders answering questions about their daily Bible reading habits. So if you're looking to get some insight on how to engage Scripture better, there's Ray Ortland and our very own best friend Kevin DeYoung, Jen Wilkin. There's a variety of folks on there. So you can go on there and check that out. Again, the website is paulsleatherco.com. Go check them out. Their Bibles are beautiful. I have one. You guys are getting yours shortly, and you will love it. I think it's the nicest Bible I've owned, and I've owned some of those calfskin ones and stuff, but I like this one more because it just feels a little bit sturdier and better put together. So check them out, paulsleatherco.com. Our other sponsor is Dwell Bible App, which if you're a regular listener, you should be familiar with. Speaking of Bibles, it's an audio Bible app. If you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, they offer a 20% discount They offer a whole range of features, listening plans. You can listen. You know, they've taken reading plans and incorporated it in. So chronological, straight through the Bible, the McShane plan, these different ones where you can chop up the Bible, listen through it. It's a great way to get scripture into your everyday life in a whole variety of times that you normally wouldn't be able to read. So again, go to dwellapp.io/happyrant and check them out as well.
Man, good promo work, Pipe. That was solid. And good promo work, like bringing in those sponsors too. As the head of our business division, you are doing an amazing job. And I have a question for Ronald. Okay, I have just a probing question. I'm going to put him on the spot a little bit. No context. Yeah, this is a no context question. Would you start? And I want you to base this on their names. In fantasy football this weekend, would you start David Johnson or Devontae Parker? David Johnson or Devontae Parker? Don't think about it too much. I might be multitasking a little bit while we do.
Yeah, try not to think about the matchups and their history all that, Ronnie. Just the names.
Yeah, I like the name Devontae better, so I'll go.
Dude, so do I, man. I was leaning toward that. A little more flair there. He's got a good matchup at Jacksonville tonight. Recording this on a Thursday, so thank you, baby. That's good. Good help on the. On the fantasy football tip right there. So, boys, if we can't talk about Ronald's big new deal, what can we talk about?
Absolutely nothing.
Yeah, nothing. There's nothing going on in the world right now.
Let's talk about nothing. I want to talk about zero.
All right. This is sort of the Seinfeld of podcasts.
Yeah.
Yeah. This will be only the 97th time we've done this.
What could we talk about that would be offensive to no one?
I mean, I have a book releasing next week. We could talk about that.
Yeah, Pipe, I got it. I got it in the mail.
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad you finally got yours. And I didn't get mine until yesterday, so I was glad to see that other people were getting theirs. Did you get yours, Ronnie?
Yeah, I got it. But you're the author. You don't need it. You have a PDF somewhere. You're good. You know.
Well, sure, but how am I supposed to Instagram photos of this thing if I don't have the thing?
I mean, you just take the photo that the pub already released of it. You're good, man.
So I have a question. You know, I have this book, Hoping for Happiness, releasing. It'll probably release right around the time this podcast releases. So, you know, listeners, go check that out. It's I'm pretty proud of it. But I have a question for Ted in regards to book launches, considering Ted doesn't like social media, doesn't like marketing, doesn't like self-promotion, doesn't like endorsements.
Yeah.
Other than this podcast, Don't listen to any of this publisher who we might be doing a deal with. Ted loves all that stuff.
Ted loves all of those
things. If not, Ronnie and I will more than make up for him. What do you do for a book launch if you don't do the things that I just listed?
Yeah, that's a great question, Piper. The answer is not a whole lot. I talk about it on my two podcasts. So, like, I try to bring it up on the two podcasts. I try to talk about it in ways that are genuine and organic, which are two words that definitely aren't cliches. I always say yes to like every interview or like podcast or radio show appearance or whatever that the publisher sets up. So I'm eager to say yes to those things. So I basically do everything except the things that you mentioned, which I really do feel creepy about. So that's just where I'm at. I'm not judging anyone else for how they launch their own books, but I kind of figure like all that other stuff doesn't really move the needle anyway. So I try to keep it real authentic, which is the growing up in the 90s part of me, I think.
I think the other thing about growing up in the 90s is that you assume the publisher is going to market your book for you.
Yes, I do. Here's the rub, Piper. Help me understand this. The publisher has several people on their staff that they're paying to market books, yet I'm not getting paid anything to market the book, yet I'm supposed to do all the marketing. Like, to me, there's always been a little, you know, call it cognitive dissonance. I don't know. Help me understand that, because you've worked on both sides of it.
Yeah, it has become a really weird thing because, you know, publishers are not, they're not really entities anybody cares about with a couple exceptions. You know, I think Crossway is sort of a they're the kind of publisher that people look to and go, oh, Crossway put it out. It's probably reliable. Sure. There's a little bit of that.
That Waterbrook Multnomah family that Ron and I are part of.
Totally and utterly trustworthy. Just go look at their line of books. You guys are in it. Yeah, you're on a shelf full of books of people who would just be your total compadres for sure.
Dude, they're mentors, they're friends. I mean, I don't want to say we hang out all the
blood
time.
Blood brothers.
There's some of that. Yeah.
And exactly. I mean, blood sisters. Let's not be misogynist.
Dude, that show Band of Brothers that was popular a few years ago, that was actually based on kind of the Waterbrook, stable of writers. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't. They did a really good job of transitioning that to a World War II context. I'm really impressed with how they wrote
it. It kind of got lost in the committee process of writing. It turned into a war thing. I wasn't thrilled. Ron wasn't thrilled either. It was good.
Yeah, no, they needed to stick to what it was really about, which was writing and selling marketing books.
So
they strayed.
Which Waterbrook author was the David Schwimmer character, the one who everybody hated?
All of them.
That was an aggregation.
Now, Piper, get me back to this marketing thing, because I want to understand why there are people getting like $50,000 a year on staff and getting sent to conferences and getting medical to market books, yet I'm supposed to do all of it.
Well, a good publisher does a fair amount outside of the realm that you can reach, in terms of advertising, promotion, putting money into social media, creating videos for, whatever, $12,000. There is a fair amount, but frankly, the publishers don't have nearly the power they used to promote a book. Like, it used to be that if, HarperCollins decided a book was going to be a bestseller, they could kind of make it a bestseller. There was kind of a synchronization between them and retailers. Well, now there's no such thing as retailers. There's Barnes & Noble, but that's mostly just a marketing thing. Like, if a book exists at Barnes & Noble, people can discover it, but I don't know how good their sales are these days. And so it really is – the reason it rests on the author now is because the author has the audience. It used to be that the publisher took a book to readers – to buyers. The author has the audience, and so it's up to you to reach your audience. So for somebody like you, that's tricky because you write a bunch of different kinds of books. You've switched audiences. You're not a platform builder. You don't care about that sort of mechanization. And so, for you, it's like, what am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to go be somebody I'm not. For somebody like me, it's somewhere in the middle where I'm not a platform builder, but there is more of a built-in audience through social media, through people who are interested in what I write. I tend to stay in kind of a general lane. I'm not like writing books for kids on one side and books about Mike Tyson on the other side and whatever. Like, the breadth of your writing probably hurts your sales to some degree. It makes you much more interesting to read, though. It's a weird thing. I saw best friend Jared C. Wilson post something on Twitter yesterday where he said the majority of marketing dollars from publishers go to authors that don't need it, which is really true.
That is true.
They promote the blazes out of like the Tim Kellers and the John Pipers and whoever.
Yeah.
Whose books are going to sell if they're not promoted because they exist.
That's true.
And somebody, they just have a baseline of like, well, we're going to sell 30 to 50,000 out of the gates, and then that's going to sell another 30,000 because people find out about it. Whereas guys like us could really use the $50,000 they got in marketing.
Yeah.
And I would, I feel like maybe we should work this into a future book proposal. Would Jen just say, hey, instead of doing any marketing for this thing, take your marketing budget and pay us.
Yeah. Yeah.
We can put money into social media. We can do whatever. We'll put in the effort, but just give us the money.
That's actually a great idea. I think
they won't do it. There's a 0% chance they'll do it. Like, just cut us a $10,000 check. But
yeah,
I kind of like the idea.
Less than zero for sure.
Because I would just pocket my part and not do anything.
Correct. That's why it's less than zero chance it'll ever
happen. Yeah. I mean, just to be completely transparent, that's what would happen. I feel like, I don't know. I feel like as a company, the three of us, we need to talk about this, and you guys need to hear me say that though I won't do anything in the marketing space and I won't bring anything to the table as far as like lining up blurbers or tweeting about it, I plan to do more than my fair share of the writing. Like, I'm a workhorse, man. I'm ready to go writing wise. And, I'll write more words if need be. I want to show you guys that I'm an equal partner in this, this thing that I'm talking about, which you're being vague and coy about, but potentially a new project involving the three of us.
Have either of you ever encountered any tension in a co-authoring situation with the division of labor, either on the writing or on the marketing?
Not with each other. Right? Right, baby?
Yeah, like, and that's because we divided things up like just literally 50-50, so there was
dude,
no
chance. Dude, we did, and we were so like relaxed about it. Yeah. I don't feel like there was any tension, like, ooh, you wrote 2,000 more words than me or vice versa or whatever.
Yeah, and we also did that kind of thing where we sent each other our chaps and we sort of said, hey, just free reign, go over it, you know, give thoughts, do some edits. So we were pretty loose about it with each other too.
Dude, we were, but we're both kind of like the same kind of writer, I think, in that we're both pretty hands-off other people's work. Like, yeah, your vision of how it's supposed to come out of your head, like, I trust that that's the way you want it, so it's not like I was going to roll up my sleeves and rip it to pieces. Yeah, and vice versa.
Plus, that would take a lot of extra work that neither of us care about.
Exactly, dude. There's a reason we want to write half a book, right? I don't sign up to write half a book so that I can write a whole one.
And by the way, when you sent me over those PDFs of your chapters, to this day, I've never read them. So everything's cool.
To this day, I have no idea what you said.
I had no idea what you said on the half of each of those books that we wrote together.
It could be rank heresy, and I wouldn't have known.
That's how much I trust your writing. By the way, when people ask me about it, I say it's really the best part of the book.
Dude, now, was this a long game? Are you like an emergent church guy, and you sneakily knew that I wouldn't read any of your PDFs, so you snuck it all in there?
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. Yeah.
Long game.
That's a little bit... I mean, that really sets the tone for how this podcast works, too. I mean, you can't sneak heresy past when we're just recording necessarily, but do either of you ever remember what we talk about on past episodes?
Not one word.
Not really.
Other than the word like the or and.
So do you have the occasional experience where somebody comes up and they're like, hey, I was listening to your podcast. I loved the episode about whatever. And you're like,
yes,
huh.
But to the negative.
We talked about that? Oh, they come up and say, I didn't like the episode?
Yeah, I probably ask, like, what did we talk about? I probably ask that question 3 times a week.
I've had people call me on things and from episodes from literally fellas like 2 years ago.
Dude, so now, Ronald, this is fascinating because you're getting – it's because you're a pastor, man. That's the problem. But you're getting blowback that, like, I'm not getting.
Well, right. So check it out. So they use it – so I'm going to be kind of vague here. But, like, I've had it used as a weapon against me. So what happens is people maybe have an issue with me in regards to a particular thing. Yeah. And they'll say, and I really, you know, and part of it is that I really struggled with something you said. And they'll say something I said. I'll say, what did I say? I don't remember saying that. And they said, well, it was on that podcast you do from like 2 years ago. And I'm like, wait a minute. You literally went through all these pods to find this thing from 2 years ago. And then it'll be like, yeah, and it was on this topic, and you guys are talking about this, and I'll have to say, well, you know, that was probably the other guy that said that, because, and again, I might even agree with him.
Frankly, like, it was probably me. If you're in trouble for something, like, there's an 87% chance it was something I said.
Yeah, it was actually 100% chance, because it was you. so, ironically enough.
We're going to be a little less vague in this moment, in that it was absolutely you.
But Pipe, here's the thing. Like, I still, you know, even though it didn't help me, I still defend you. I said, well, you know, I actually agreed what he said, you know, on that particular topic. I said, dude, I'm struggling right now with a podcast that I don't have any recollection of recording from 2 years ago that you went out and like kind of went through the archives and sought out. I go, that's what I'm struggling with right now.
Cancel culture takes a lot of work, doesn't it?
Oh, I mean, these are workhorses to spend that kind of time.
Hate listening workhorses. They're ready to go, man.
I mean, so that has happened to me, not a lot. It's happened to me a couple of times where people have come back and said, hey, that one thing you said that I literally, and I'm not trying to be intentionally like vague, right? But I've just been like, I don't remember saying that. I'm not saying you're lying, but I have I don't even remember the ep. Like, I don't remember, and this will be like on a Friday, and it'll be like, we recorded yesterday. I can't tell you one word I said other than, hey, guys, and the words like the and it or something, like, you know, because I know those words were used. I don't remember anything, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to write down what we're talking about as we're talking about it, because when I post the episode, whatever, a week later, I have no recollection. I don't remember anything clever we said. I don't remember any topics we talked about. I mean, if there's something big in the news, I'm like, okay, we probably did talk about, you know, whatever famous pastor did a dumb thing, but you know, I'm not sure.
Vague terms, right? You know, like, and such is the weighty and important, you know, content of this pod in general.
Dude, truly though, like, I think and not to get all like communications theory and research about the whole thing, but like, I do think there's something about this medium, and maybe it's our ages because we didn't sort of grow up in the age of podcasting, but like, to me, and I think to you guys, this feels very slapdash and sort of off the cuff, and like, it's just a podcast, right? Like, we're just bloviating into our computers, whereas people who are more kind of native to podcasts as being an important thing, they may weigh it more heavily, you know what I mean? Whereas for the three of us, it may be like, if we had an actual radio show on an actual like channel, we wouldn't be quite as off the cuff about it. I don't know.
See, I don't even think that's possible, because if it's, I mean, maybe on a daily radio show, it's not possible. Because I feel like if you have to come up with something new every day or every week, whatever you did last time, the only thought you put into it is, am I repeating myself? And frankly, we repeat ourselves on this podcast all the time. We make the same jokes all the time. We talk about the same people all the time. Like, this is like one big old guy telling the same story over and over again situation. And so, yeah, I don't know how any – I feel like podcasters who take themselves seriously are probably the worst. Like, yeah.
I think that's been our platform, though, too, Pipe, is like, can we be like three guys within a particular tribe that act – that like don't just say they don't take themselves seriously, but like legitimately like do not take themselves seriously, nor take all the stuff surrounding them seriously, even if some of the content or the foundational content undergirding it all is serious. But we don't – but the responses and the reactions and the stupid things that are done, I mean, we're all a part of that and we're okay with that. And I think that's the difference, is we're okay with being part of this ridiculousness that surrounds everything that we do. And there's a lot of ridiculousness that surrounds it, right?
Dude, there totally is. And see, back to the kind of original premise, Piper, that's how I feel about book blurbs. I feel like this is the dumbest, most like ridiculous, insincere moment in American life. Like, how can anyone take this seriously? You know? Yet it's like this, it's the sort of pristine part of the like getting a book deal process, where you have to curate this like unbelievable list of people with whom you have a shallow relationship.
Well, I think a book blurb is like, it's like a diploma. So if you graduated from an elite school,
people don't look at that
and go, well, what was your GPA? What was, you know, who was your favorite professor? What did you study? What was your senior capstone? They just look at it and go, oh, Yale, nice. That's impressive.
Yeah.
That is a book blurb. They look at the list of names and go, oh, famous people. Yeah. Nice.
Randy Alcorn.
Yeah.
Not too shab.
It really is just like, it's a collection of reputation. That's what book blurbs are. It's just, you're just collecting other people's reputations, kind of like collected a diploma from a school with a reputation.
I also look at it like this though too, right? So we're in this particular moment where you got guys that are, you know, on the reservation, off the reservation. So I'm not really concerned, like, you know, so let's just use your new book, right? So the fact that you have Randy Alcorn, you know, writing a foreword for your book, that's something that tells me something about the trustworthiness of the material. And so, if a book title or a subject matter looks interesting, and you look and you either see a bunch of people you've never heard of blurb it, or a bunch of people that are suspect in terms of their theology and those types of things, it kind of, you know, it doesn't mean I wouldn't buy the book, but it also makes me have a particular kind of reservation, knowing, all right, I got to fine tooth comb this thing a little bit. Whereas when I see a Randy Alcorn, you know, forwarding your book, it kind of gives me that particular level of confidence and trust that like the material in it is legit.
If I had just gotten him to say, I'm Randy Alcorn and I approve this message, that would have been easier than having him read it and write a foreward.
Yeah, 100. Yes,
that would have been enough.
You went way too far.
It would have accomplished the same thing. Yeah. Okay, Ronald, so put on your...
A quick counter question to Ronnie's comment. What about collecting endorser names of people who are in different camps for the sake of looking how, you know, like, look at how ecumenical I am. Look at how this book connects with people across the spectrum.
Dude, we're reform guys. We're the opposite of ecumenical. Come on.
Well, yeah. Right. What if you're seeking to position yourself that way?
I don't think, I always think it works in your, I don't ever think that works in your favor. I always feel like that's a negative because I do think that people that are serious readers, they look at blurbs as to say, oh, okay, cool. Russell Moore, John Piper, Keller, Barnabas, and, you know, Jared Wills, like they approve of this book. Therefore I can trust the content and I don't know.
Dude, why do I hate the very idea of this? The more you guys talk about it, I hate it more. Why is that, Ronald? Counsel me right now. You're a man of the cloth. You grew up in the same era as me. We've got some of the same sensibilities.
No, like, I know why. Because this is legitimate too. Like, you feel your work, your content should stand alone. You don't feel like you need somebody else to approve of it so that other people will approve of it. So I don't need some fake friend
to approve of it.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, so it's because you know what's so funny is like in the record industry, like it doesn't work that way at all. Nobody blurbs.
Yeah, you don't get blurbs for records.
You don't get blurbs for records, right? People like what you do based on what you've done. And you know, people might read record reviews. That would be sort of like the version of a blurb, but there's also book reviews, right?
But at the end of the day, there's a difference there in that, like, you can enjoy a whole record in 40 minutes or 50 minutes. And it doesn't take any work. Like, it does not, if you're a thoughtful person, you focus and whatever, but like, you can turn on a record.
Absolutely.
And just do it. But a book takes work. And so like the, it's hard. You have to get people to buy in on the front end that they're willing to do the work of reading this book. And that's where the reputation comes in. And again, I'm not discounting Ted's loathing of this. I have a certain amount of like, I need to go take a cold shower after endorsing. But
that's funny because I'm not bothered by it at all. I could care less.
Well, I don't mean when I endorse other people's books. Like, I usually only do that if it's somebody who I like the person or I'd like the book, ideally both. I mean, there's a reason for it. I just mean the kind of the whole promotion process for books. But the reason you get endorsements is so people are willing to go, okay, I'll take the risk of $15 and 15 hours of time. You know,
it's a marketing tool too. You can't discount that for the
and the listening habits have changed so much too that like if you can just jump on Spotify and try something, it is the lowest risk entry point. It costs you nothing. And so it's just there. Yeah. The idea of reviewing it or even looking and going like, ooh, this has been favorited by X thousand people just doesn't matter. And nobody cares.
Well, music too. I think music is just different anyway, in the sense that like, I don't care what anyone thinks about another piece of music. Like, right. I'm going to listen to it or I'm not going to listen to it. So somebody saying something great about another piece of music doesn't really mean anything to me. I just either want to hear it based on what it is, the style that it is, the artist that he or she is, or I just don't. So that's never been a factor for me because because I know that one person's opinion of a particular kind of style or song, I mean, that makes no difference to me. Whereas when you're talking about the content of a book, you know, I want to know that the guy isn't writing something like janky in there, right? So by a blurb, it's sort of like, before I even like buy it, before I even open to the first page, I can like kind of be assured that like, all right, it's like if I'm not familiar with the author, in other words, like it's like, okay, yeah. I can have some confidence, I guess. You know?
Yeah.
I think the problem with blurbs on even the trustworthiness front or the you know, why Ted would hate it so much is because there's two aspects to books. Like, do they say something good? And then do they say something good well? Right. And no blurb convinces me of the craft or the artistry or the creativity of a book. They tell me it's good. What does that mean? It tells me they liked it. Fine. What if we did like different books? You know, you think Marilyn Robinson's great. I think she's boring. Those kinds of things. And so it's really hard for a writer's work to stand on its own two feet until you build a readership that just trusts you. And in that case, you don't need endorsements. You just need to keep
writing. I would agree when you're talking about, I think in this like Christian living genre where everything is so, you know, it needs to be, there's like a correctness, right, to the genre, right? So that you don't so there's a difference between, you know, Rachel Hollis and, you know, and Barnabas Piper, right? So like the blurbs are a way.
I mean, very few to be.
They're very narrow.
I mean, similar sales numbers. I mean, we could go on and on.
Similar content, especially with her.
Well, sure. Too. Yeah.
I think Hoping for Happiness takes took a chapter or two from Hollis.
But, well, you know, I washed my face. I stopped apologizing, and I wrote the best book.
We know that, and we weren't going to say anything, but it's uncomfortably close. Anyway, but at the same time, I lost my train of thought.
In this genre where everything has to be correct,
yeah.
Does that help you? We were talking about how endorsements don't help with.
Yeah, like what you just said about Marilynne Robinson is that's a super great point, because at the end of the day, it's fiction. It's more like a record in that sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To where it's like, you don't like Marilynne Robinson, this person likes Marilynne Robinson. Like, it doesn't really matter to me who likes her. I either like her based on my own taste or not, you know?
Yeah.
And so Marilynne doesn't need to be correct. She just needs to write a good story, and we can all have an opinion on whether that story is good for us.
Yeah, I think that's a great point, baby. Totally. And, you know, that's the best argument yet for like the purpose that it serves. Now, with a project like the aforementioned thing that might be happening for the three of us, I think that's a little bit less important, because it's not going to be like a theological tome yet. We're still going to be expected to like compile a dazzling list of all of our fake friends. And to be clear, I want to see how far we can go. Like, I want to view the blurbing process as like a big meta joke. And I want to see what kinds and what sort of variety of fake friend we can pull for this thing.
And well, yeah, man. I mean,
I may even get involved. I may see if I can pull some fake friends.
I think you can. I think you can.
I think I can too, baby. That's the thing. And I'm kind of, the more we talk about it, the more I'm feeling, excited is too strong of a word, but I'm feeling a little bit empowered to like go after some fake friends of my own.
And it's not just and you know this, Pipe, like it's not just the blurb, right? So what you get with a blurb is also you also assume that you're going to get like a photo op on that person's like Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook page saying, just got my copy in, was happy to blurb it. And
I keep track of who I send books to who don't share them. Like, Ted, you're lucky that I like you, because I know you're not going to share it. So
no, dude, respect, man. I appreciate that. Yeah, you know it's not going anywhere.
The rest of you clowns who I sent books to who haven't shared it yet, this is the last time. You're not getting any more free stuff from my publishers.
I mean, Pipe, can you just give us a minute? The thing just arrived.
Out yet at the time of this recording. I'm getting heated in advance.
We're getting a little short on time, but I want to put a finer point on this. When Ronald gets his copy of your book, like what sorts of curated things do you want in the shot with it? Do you want like a scone or like a steaming cup of coffee or like a picture of Ron's wife or like a, you know, whatever body of water
AOTA,
he's in front of?
Man. AOTA. Yeah.
Fall foliage.
All the above. Yeah.
I want a string of Instagram photos that are like a day in the curated life of a Midwestern pastor on a fall day. And
be
I just want
to, you want to, what you listen, ask for, Pipe.
Ronald, here's the assignment.
Be careful what you ask.
Be careful. Okay.
I want a photograph of that book in the same pose that Jared C. Wilson was in front of that little brick wall in Ashland, except in Jared's place will be the book.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying?
Done.
I want Ronald in the same outfit. Same outfit, same everything, same mural, except in Jared's place goes Piper's new book.
Consider it done. I might even tape it on the wall under the wings.
I would love that, dude.
Oh,
let's get tape involved.
This
tape
would
is
be,
underrated.
This would be my favorite
this day and age. Yeah,
there's nothing really. I would say today. It's Thursday. What's the date, man? It's September 24. I would say I have one goal today, and that's to literally make myself just the object of marketing decadence, for hoping for happiness.
Can you hang a TJ Maxx tag on the book?
Yeah. I mean, you have to.
Can you put a little pair of khaki shorts on the?
You have to talk to Jared C about those kinds of things. You know, God, yeah. I don't even. You say TJ Maxx, and I say TJ who? You know, yeah, TJ Timbs. Right. Like, I don't know.
It's a little low end. It's a little utilitarian for Ronald.
Yeah.
What about like a pair of Docksiders on the ground underneath, just like in memoriam of that moment?
That's it. That's
Pipe. You're gonna be. I'm gonna make you proud. This is gonna cement our friendship. I'm going to come out with a series of photos of HFH that is just going to be mind-boggling for you.
This thrills me. You just turned my day right side up. All of that anger I was feeling at those people who had dropped the ball, well, Ronnie's going to make up for every bit.
I'm going to do my best.
Speaking of dropping the ball, Ted, if you send me photos of like my book in shoulder pads or something.
Yeah.
I'll
do that.
We can push those from the Happy Rant account. So like,
we can get the correct
personal flavor from both of you.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely. Consider it done, my friends.
Oh, you guys are the best.
Man. Yeah. Look at that. Look, the thing just hit number one on Amazon. Just us talking about it, Ted.
It hit number one in a category they made up just so I would post that it hit
just so you would
one.
Hit number one.
That's
Absolutes.
Right. Every single author of a Christian book hits number one in a category that no other books are in.
I've always wondered that, Pipe, and not that I don't know how that works. It's just I've always wondered, like, why people repost the number one thing when they know it's not really number one.
It's a fake category.
Yeah, I don't think
so
they
funny
know.
To me. Oh, they don't know. Okay.
I don't think most
like,
people
it's
realize
like
that,
it's people that, should,
that Amazon messes with you.
Yeah. Well, I just saw The Social Dilemma, so I know that now, like, better than anybody, you know.
Well,
so,
and
baby, was that thing good?
Oh, dude, it was so epic. You've got to see it, T.
Dude, we're watching the thing about the Space Shuttle Challenger.
Yeah, I want to watch that, too, but watch Social Dilemma. It really is epic, for sure.
Nice, dude. Yeah, the Space Shuttle thing is epic as well.
Have you seen it already?
I'm like three eps in. I don't even know how many eps there are. This is a Maxim Cluck production, man. Shout out to Maxim. He wanted to watch it, so we started. We dove in together a couple of nights ago. It's super riveting. It's
I want to see it. Social Dilemma though is just like one ep, so it's just like an hour and a half, whatever it is. So it'll be quick to get through.
Nice, man. I'll check it out for sure. Boys,
this podcast has been a social dilemma, hasn't it?
Dude, no, I want to go 2 minutes on one more thing. One more incredible thing that I just watched that I'd never seen before, and I'm ashamed. Al Pacino, 1992, Sin of a Woman.
You never saw that?
No, I'd never seen Sin of a Woman.
Oh, dude, me and my wife still, like, we still have lines from that movie we, like, quote to each other.
Oh, for real, man. Oh, that movie is so good, and it's a great fall movie.
Yeah.
It's a great, like, swanky New England boys' school movie.
Oh, yeah.
It hits Mount Rushmore in a lot
it's
of
movies
areas.
That they is made it? Back in that day, literally, usually starring like, you know, Matt Damon and other people like that.
A bunch of floppy 90s hair kids, you know,
a bunch of frat boys that accidentally became actors.
Exactly.
Is it ever not fall at a swanky New England boys school?
No, it's always fall.
Okay.
It's always fall. It's always like light jacket weather.
It's always October.
Yeah.
It's always October for frat boys.
Dude, always October. That's going to be the name of the concept record that we do together, baby.
Always October. That sounds always like an October. Emo record from
I know.
2001.
2001, which is
always
totally
October.
My wheelhouse.
Wasn't that a Counting Crows album, actually?
It probably was.
No, I don't think it was. But
except they weren't emo.
Yeah.
It sounds like it.
Boys, speaking of... speaking of everything after, we... We need to get on with everything that happens after this podcast today, which
I got a lot of photo ops to do, boys.
Ron's got a lot of photo ops.
I've
got to teach school kids. By that, I mean, I've got to speak to half of my classroom from behind a welding helmet and zoom the rest of them in.
In the fall.
In the fall. Like, think swanky New England boarding school, and that's kind of the experience that I'm going to be living today.
Except it's not swanky or New England.
Other than those minor details.
Yeah. Exactly. Boys, we've done what we always do in this program.
Kind of.
In that we've wandered to and fro throughout really no topics whatsoever this morning.
We said blurb a lot. Lots of blurb.
We did say blurb.
Yeah. People are going to get tired of that, I feel.
Well, like, we developed a concept around blurbing that I think people
are going to have blurb fatigue.
Wait, but, and a pub house is calling us, asking us to suss that out for them.
Oh, for sure. For sure. We're on the cutting edge of that. Are there even pub houses anymore? I feel like Harvest House is just like, so like one guy in India, like tweeting. I don't even feel like they have, you know what I mean? Like they don't even have offices anymore. It's just like they're farming all that out.
Yeah. There are no, there, yeah, there's no businesses anymore.
There's no
COVID
anymore.
COVID wiped out. Just calm.
It's America in 2020. Who needs businesses?
Right. Business, it's a guy with a laptop sitting somewhere like on the Swiss Alps doing business.
Yeah. It's a guy with his phone on a bus in some country. Anyway, boys, we've done what we always do on this program, in that we've wandered to and fro throughout no topics, and until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hello, my name's Rachel Carmen, and I want to invite you to come over and listen to my podcast. It's called Real Refreshment. For years and years as a young mother, I chased after the wind, thinking that the world could offer me the refreshment I longed for. But it was only when I discovered it in the person of Jesus Christ that I really found refreshment. Come on over and join me as we dig into Bible study. I'll see you there.